All right, let's get the show started. Technorama episode 394 for December 18th, 2013. The 12 Die of Christmas.
I started to put 12 Dice of Christmas,
good
but, you
morning,
know.
Folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history. And now, the news.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
We have some unexpected guests, and I need to get some more browser cookies.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
These are delicious.
Watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here's your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
I'm going to dress up this week as Mark Zuckerberg. How's that?
All right. Oh, you look more like the Emperor.
Palpatine?
Yeah.
Excellent, young Padawan.
That's yeah. There you go. See, that look more like it.
Welcome to Technorama for December 18th, 2013. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. No receipts for this show. You cannot return it after Christmas. I am Chuck Tabassi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Glug, glug, glug.
I picked the worst time to take a drink.
You know this script inside and out. Come on, it doesn't change week to week.
No, but maybe I should memorize it then.
Bad choice.
No, I'm doing good, man. I'm ready for Christmas now. Things are starting to, you know, planets are coming in line. My goose is getting fat. Yeah, it's ready.
Over the river and through the woods, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, exactly.
That song would have been so much easier with the GPS, wouldn't it?
Yeah, follow the coordinates to Grandma's house.
Down I-43 and left at exit 34. Just doesn't carry the same, does it?
No, it does not.
The modern version. We'll get something to work with that, and maybe next year we'll sing it to you. Which reminds me, this will be the last.
Hey, that's not a promise. That's more like a threat.
Right. Anytime we sing on the show, it's a threat. We're going to take a quick break. And coming up in this episode, we have beer, which Craig is already imbibing. Okay. Simon Pegg and Uranus. I'm going to say it the Latin way.
Mr. Turtle, how many keystrokes does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system, Pop?
I never found out without baiting. Ask Mr. Owl.
Mr. Owl, how many keystrokes does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system, Pop?
Let's find out. One, two, three, three.
How many licks does it take to get to the ring zero center of an operating system, Pop? The world may never know.
Chuck and Craig, I haven't talked to you in a while, and I thought I'd say hello and see how Technorama was doing.
Pedro!
Who are you, mister?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes. I think I saw one of your películas, your movies.
Pulp Fiction, Star Wars, and The Incredibles.
I'm just baking another cake for Chuck and Craig. They do such a good job.
Stop wasting all your free time making a mess in the kitchen.
What are you talking about, Mr. Samuel?
I'm talking about snakes on a plane.
Snakes on what? What you mean as snakes?
I know that sounds crazy, but I don't give a damn because snakes on a plane!
I think you're loco, Mr. Jackson. You've been sitting in your bathtub too long. Last time I went in a bathtub, I got bald hair.
For God's sake, quit waxing your big bald head. Just hop on that greasy bike, go get your homeboy, Charles and Craig, and go see Snakes on a Plane. Snakes on a Plane! Snakes on a Plane!
If you ask me, you need to get your geek on.
On this day in history for December 18th, 2013, this is the 352nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and if your math is very simple, you'll know that there are only 13 days left in the year. It was on this date in 1642 that Abel Tasman, or maybe it's Abel Tasman, becomes the first European to land in, not Tasmania, New Zealand.
Oh. And the premiere performance of the Nutcracker by Piotr Ilyich. Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Why do you do this to me? Tchaikovsky. In St. Petersburg, Russia, on the same date in 1892.
Maybe we should use his music this time. Bum, ba-da-ba-bum, bum, bum, bum,
yeah,
bum.
Should have.
That same date in 1898, Gaston de Chasselot-Lubat, I think. I'm never good with the French names. Sets the first officially recognized land speed record of 39.245 miles per hour in a Jeantot electric car.
Wow. Electric, wow, back then. And in Piltdown, Piltdown Man, discovered to be a hoax as announced by Charles Darwin 100 years...
Not Darwin, Dawson!
I'm sorry, I saw Charles, you know, Darwin, whatever.
101 years ago today, a hoax? Yeah. 101 and a hoax. Can't imagine where that comes from.
Yeah. They set a precedent for us.
Project SCORE, the world's first communications satellite, is launched on this date in 1858.
And December 18th, 1966, Saturn's moon... why am I having trouble with names tonight? Epidermis.
Close
is
enough.
Discovered... Huh?
Epidermis, whatever.
Epidermis. 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 Is discovered by Richard L. Walker.
Soyuz 13, crewed by cosmonauts Valentin Lebedev and Pyotr Klimuk, is launched from Baikonur in the Soviet Union 40 years ago.
Hey, that's two Pyotrs in here today. And today in 1987, Larry Wall releases the first version of Perl programming language. Wow, 87.
You did quite well with that. Nice job. 16 years ago today, HTML4 is published by the World Wide Web Consortium, and IE still doesn't recognize it quite right.
Still, I know. Internet Explorer. Anyway, NASA launches into orbit the Terra... I thought I was going to say terraforming. platform carrying five Earth observation instruments, including the Aster, Circe, Nisser, Modus, and Moppet on this date in 1999.
Those are the new characters on Game of Thrones, I think.
Oh, I thought those were Ewok names.
Aster's, Ceres, Misser, Modus, and Moppet. Fetch forth the wine, Lord Moppet. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Swedish scientist and inventor Christopher Polham, born on this date in 1661.
And J.J. Thompson, English physicist and Nobel Prize laureate, was also born today in 1856.
Not J.J. Abrams.
Not Abrams. I didn't say that.
But you got Charles Darwin earlier. Engineer and inventor of FM radio, Edwin Armstrong, was born on this date in 1890.
And also born on this date in 1934, Russian astronaut and engineer Boris Volynov.
That was a bit redundant. You said and also. Celebrating his 70th birthday today in 1943, English singer, songwriter, guitarist, producer, and actor Keith Richards. He's
and drug tester, I think.
Years old today.
I think they've left the drug tester out. Reaching his 67th birthday today is director Steven Spielberg.
Actor and producer Brad Pitt turns 50. He doesn't strike me as 50.
No. When you got money like that, you can look at whatever age you want to.
And marry whoever you want to.
That's right. And finally, wrestler, actor, and producer Stone Cold Steve Austin is 49.
Again with the redundancy. You said wrestler and actor. And well, that's the way it was on this day in history for December 18th, 2013.
Hey, he doesn't do them at the same time, or does he?
Yes.
Wrestler, actor.
I love Groucho Marx. He was interviewing a wrestler one time and he said, I've never been to one of your matches, but I'd like to go to one of your rehearsals.
Hey, don't talk over the professor.
I was forgetting he's there.
Hey, by the way.
Yes.
Speaking of Futurama, you know what I found out this weekend?
What did you find out?
The entire run of Futurama is on Netflix now. Season 10 is on there. So, yes, rejoice. Go watch.
There is a law in Norway which now states that all books must be digitized. Thank you. And this ad will continue for 3 more seconds. There we go.
Oh, you should use ad block. I thought you were...
A law in Norway has their national library scanning all literature and then making it publicly available to anyone. To anyone coming in under Norwegian IP address. Okay. Pretty
hey,
cool.
It's a redundant kind
Norway
of night.
Now, or in the nearest future. But it's also pretty awesome for the much more distant future. Why? The Atlantic explains. Imagine digital archaeologists coming across the remains of early 21st century civilization and an old data center on the warming tundra. They look around, find some scraps of BuzzFeed and the Atlantic, maybe some Encyclopedia Britannicas, and then, gleaming in the data, a complete set of Norwegian literature.
Oh, look at there.
And this guy's scanning like a scroll, and all I can think of is that old video where the guy is trying to teach him how to use a book instead of a scroll.
Yeah, I know. I told Harrison tonight, he was reading before bed, and I said, oh, you're using the original iPad.
This is going to take a while, however, because it's expected to, it started in 2006, and it's going to take up to 20 years to complete.
Actually, I thought it was a little forward thinking of them, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. I'm starting to do that with some of my literature into Evernote.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got people comment on how clean my desk is at work because any paper, like notes.
Yes.
I'm like, why would I want to keep the notebook around? I'll go in a conference room. If I make notes on a pad, I'll take a picture of it and throw the notes away.
We were meeting with an insurance guy, and he said, you know, your routing number for your check. Well, we didn't have a checkbook on us, but I had scanned some of the first paperwork that they gave us when we opened this account, and I just searched for the right things in Evernote, and there it was. It was scanned, and the routing number was in there. And the routing number, because it was part of an image, it also was scanned and searchable. So I love it. We've talked about Evernote before.
Yes.
But I don't think the Norwegian library system is using it.
No. But you know what we can do is we should fire up the Norwegian proxies and we can start checking out their library.
See if the complete works of Thor are in there.
Thor's been deleted, but Loki's in there.
He's such a prankster.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only available on Odin's Day.
Odin's Day. Not Thor's Day, or
also in the news, we are Monty Python fans, as
yes.
evidence of my boxer shorts that say I fart in your general direction.
I've seen them at Dragon Con.
Hey. TMI there, buddy.
Like I'm drinking, trying to forget about it.
A story for another time. Simon Pegg will star in the brand new film from the Monty Python crew. Looks like Simon Pegg has crossed one more genre staple off his movie bucket list. Zombies, no aliens, Star Trek, Doctor Who, now Monty Python. He's a well-rounded geek.
Oh, that's right. He was on Doctor Who.
Screen Daily is reporting that Pegg has signed on to star in the new movie Absolutely Anything. The film will also star Terry Gilliam, Michael Palin, Terry Jones, and John Cleese. Pegg will play Neil Clark, who is, quote, a delusioned school teacher who suddenly finds he has magical powers bestowed upon him by aliens, unquote. And the Monty Python crew will voice the aliens. Reports say that the movie is both live action and CG. Oh, and Robin Williams is going to voice Pegg's dog, which could be brilliant or terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Eddie Murphy could do a donkey pretty well.
Well, keep in mind, technically, this movie is not a Monty Python movie, you know, in the sense. I don't think everybody from the Monty Python that was in there. But it's enough to go, hey, I got my attention, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, have you heard about an official Monty Python show that they're going to be doing? It's like a stage show that they're going to be doing.
Not Spamalot, is it?
No, it is not Spamalot. This is a new show. And from what I understand, the ticket sold out in like less than a minute. It was that popular. And they added dates. They added some dates, but I think most of the shows are in London. I thought they may do a couple here. But they did say that there is plans to record it and make a, you know, a DVD / Blu-ray kind of release of it. So which I would totally get and check out.
All right. We will keep an eye out for that. Well, I want to look at the birthday calendar. Since it's the end of the year, we're going to need a new calendar. Oh, we've got this wiki thing. That's right. We don't need to turn any pages or call our insurance man.
The wiki knows no time until it was down and then we brought it back to life.
Now, when they switch service automatically without telling us. Yeah. Looking at our birthday calendar, December 20th through the... No, well, actually, we're looking at 18th through 25th, so... First one we have is on the 20th, Phil Burchill, who will be 0x21 in 2006, which would now make him 0x28. Okay, happy birthday, Phil. I'm up in the 0x30s now. 21st is James Ballard. I know, it just sounds better that way. A.K.A. Carc Sindrew. Bo Pace on the 22nd. Also on the 22nd, Luke Smith, a.k.a. Chuck Stalker.
Yeah, we hadn't heard from them in a while.
He's 13 now. How old is Harrison? I know.
How old is Harrison?
Yeah.
He's 11.
Okay, so he's right up there with him.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, these kids are growing up fast. Wasn't Luke just like 8?
Yeah, when we first went to Dragon Con, it was. Something like
that. All right, Jason Pelloni is also on the 22nd. We got three birthdays on the 22nd. Happy birthday, Jason. That's a bunch of Pelloni. Florida. Richard Green on the 23rd. We're going to have to send him a Christmas birthday wish on Monday.
Yeah.
Or a week from Monday, whatever it is. Mad Boom, also on the 24th, the Christmas Eve birthday on our calendar. And we should have reached into the future because we will not be doing a show next week. I think that's twice now I've said it. I'll make sure it's at least three times. But if it's your birthday and you didn't get on the birthday calendar, happy birthday to you. And put it on there so we can give you a shout out next year. Otherwise, hey, how are we going to know? Right? You got to tell us. Go to chuckchat.com/wiki and we'll put your birthday on there. Big plans in 2014. We have Hacks and Strange Stories before that happens, though.
Yes.
Hit the right buttons here so I can get Lenny's voiceover thingy. Hacks and Strange Stories! Lenny almost hacked up a lung on that one.
Yeah.
All right. You see a headline like this, you can't help but think this is Technorama. It says, OMG, there were cat bombs during World War II. Yes, you heard that right. Cat bombs.
Hey, by the way, when I first thought, my first thought without even looking at the article was, you know, the canister would land, open up, and and the cat started.
Right, a bunch of mad rabid cats like over the enemy. Get it off!
Yeah, you know, kind of like the you know, the rabbit from Holy Grail.
Right. You can't beat World War II for crazy technological innovations. People worked on anything from shark repellent to exploding rats to bombs that would drift across the Pacific Ocean on the wind. Unfortunately, there were also cat bombs. The problem with these bombs wasn't just that they involved the use of God's cutest creatures. The problem was that the logic that led to their testing, they were never actually used.
Thank God.
It was so crazy that it approached the kind of aerodynamic alchemy. The Allies had a problem guiding a bomb, which was moving through the air, which was moving to a ship, which was moving from a plane, which was moving, was no easy task.
A lot of moving parts there in that hypothetical list.
It was an important task. And so people entered into that horrific state of mind known as brainstorming, during which they supposedly there are no bad ideas. Supposedly no bad ideas.
Yeah, supposedly.
Someone from the American Office of Strategic Services, grandparent to the CIA, let their mind drift to cats. Like they do today on the internet. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cats always land on their feet.
Yes. The internet was built by the military.
Here's the premise. Here's the premise. Cats always land on their feet, which meant they had to have some aerodynamic skill. False. Cats false. Also did not like to get wet. Strap a cat to a bomb, then and show it a giant stretch of ocean and a single dry boat. And it would head for the boat, guiding the bomb with it.
Of course.
Someone else at the OSS, that's the predecessor to the CIA, remember? They bought that logic, and lo, the cat bomb was tested. The cats in question, they found, passed out halfway through the drop, and thus weren't even awake to guide the bombs to their destinations. Although, how the cats would have managed it, even if they were conscious, is still a big question. The project was scrapped, and all that lingers now is the realization that when cats scratch the hell out of us, and they demand to be fed, they're not being cranky, they're just getting retribution.
Hey, by the way, you know, I imagine when they were trying to sell the idea, you know, to the higher ups about the cats, there's like this awkward silence in the conference room. And all of a sudden, good going, Johnson.
The sarcastic clap.
Yeah. No, I was saying, like, you sold Fritz. Me.
Oh, this is the Allies. I was going to say, Fritz.
Wrong accent there, buddy.
You get sent to the front.
Johnson, that's a great idea.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with Remember When We Think We May Have Found the First Wireless Internet.
That, yeah.
It I comes in a box. It has no wires. Next year, that's what I'm bringing to Dragon Con, the internet. Take with us. We'll be right back.
Whenever I wear my aluminum helmet, the only podcast that can get through is Chuck Chat and Hit Norma. Hello, Chuck. Hello, Craig. We are being watched. 101.
Hello and welcome to Technorama. It's got a silicone skin that fits like a glove. The only thing that's exposed when it's all tight and sealed up, even if you put in the wide body adapter, it's still too squeezy on the silicone skin. There is a little rubber trap door. It's a very thin membrane, and it impedes absolutely none.
Every once in a while, you know, raise it up or take it off and clean, you know, around it. But I love it. I love that rubbery silicone feel. However, I would always feel like I just want to slide on my hand with that chrome on the back.
It gets pretty slippery, especially if you've been eating Cheetos or something. Your hand gets a little greasy. This has a nice grippy feel, and you know, you could go out in the rain and this would be completely protected because it is practically watertight.
Ah, the age of the transistor radio. Well, it turns out that there was one such radio with the name Internet. It's an all-transistor AM radio, the Model S1000. That sounds like a Radio Shack thing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Although it's not something we specifically collect, we've always had a fondness of early technology. It must have developed out of working with scientific and optical instruments. Well, okay, this is written by somebody else. Passing through Amsterdam just before Christmas, the banker and his writer, Mr. What's his name? Mark Hill, stopped by Rorodenzaken, or something like that, in the famous Ninth Streets. As they were just about to leave, empty-handed, they spotted the portable transistor radio in a cabinet. It wasn't the radio itself that stopped them in their tracks, but the name Internet. Transistor radios like this were first released in 1954 and were produced in vast quantities in the 60s and 70s. This example probably dates from the late 1960s to around 1970, considering the design of the box. It's an extremely interesting date when the name is considered. Nobody knows exactly when the word internet was first used or who coined it, but it appears to have been from not 1883 onwards. I think they meant 1983. When it was used as an adjective or verb to describe interconnected motions.
I'll say that would be some that would Nostradamus would that would kind
be
of stuff
no,
right
that
there.
Would be 1883.
Yeah.
I was watching Sleepy Hollow, and it's great because the guy from 200 years ago says, you know, in my day, the term intercourse simply meant a casual conversation between two people. And awful meant, you know, full of awe and inspiring. So the lady goes, so if I had awful intercourse with somebody, do we have a second date?
Not funny. That's funny.
Well, so in 1883, it was used as an adjective or a verb to describe interconnected motions. I almost read that as modems. which is very appropriate today. It was seemingly first used as a noun in 1977 when demonstrations of an early ARPAD and SatNet networks were held.
Oh, like to internet between the computers?
Yeah.
Oh, a noun. I'm sorry, a noun. You said noun. Excuse me.
Vint Cerf and Bob Kahn. It wasn't commonly used by the likes of you and I until the late 1990s. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I was using it in the 80s. Okay, well, the likes of you and me aren't the likes of most of the readers. A decade after Tim Berners-Lee developed the thing it actually indicates. Tim Berners-Lee didn't invent the internet.
No, the internet.
No, he's the.
The internet was born out of the ARPANET and all that stuff. It's been around for.
I'm calling shenanigans on this writer. I want to see the comments flame on.
Hey, well, let me ask you, and maybe this is just, maybe I'm just not realizing this, but when did ARPANET turn into the internet?
You mean like when it went from the government thing to.
Yeah, is it like, well, that's a good marketing term. You know, it's not like they just all of a sudden decided to start calling it the internet because it was a great marketing term. It's just at what point did it finally start to flip over, you know, kind of.
It was either the era when colleges started getting online, it became more academic, or it was later, like in the late 80s, early 90s, when commercial entities could get online.
Yeah.
So I don't exactly know. Question.
It's more of a gradual thing, wouldn't you say?
What's that?
It was probably more of a gradual thing.
Well, the term had to have come up at some point and then probably gained adoption.
Yeah, right here on this AM radio. AM radio. So. That's right.
Welcome to the internet.
That would have been funny.
Yeah.
Who do we have in the chat room this Christmas Eve party week thing? We have you are in here. We have No Receipt Chuck. We have Captain Rootbeer. We have Gift Card Tim. Guru Mad Marvin the Giant.
Wait a minute. How much is that gift card Tim for?
It's an e-gift card.
An e-gift card.
You can't take it back. If you want to be on our live show in the chat room, have some of the fun that these guys have every week, and listen and watch to all the things that don't get edited out by Craig, because there are some things during these breaks that go on. We had some with Sith Lords and whatnot earlier in the show. I can't even remember what we were talking about. We
had the internet.
No, we had a new Sith Lord. What did we call him? Oh, that's right. Uranus.
Yeah.
We could go as a Jedi to Dragon Con with a sign that says Uranus and go, no, it's pronounced Uranus, like D. Monet. Anyway, if you want to see all the shenanigans that go on unedited, join us every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time, or whatever that equates to in your area of the woods. And we'd love to see you. Hey, I just realized if I move, that's going to change the time I have to show up for the show.
Oh, yep. Should have thought about that.
Dang. Or we move the show.
Later.
There's other plans. I don't know if you want to stay up much later. It gets pretty late in your neck of the woods. Other plans for the show that are going to evolve as things go. Geek Library, right?
Right.
All right. You saw this. I saw this. I didn't read it, but we'll read it now. The Secret Origins of Nerd, Dork, and Other Things You Have Been Called.
Finally, you know where they came from.
No longer are the terms nerd and geek used as insults. Well, it depends who you talk to and how they say them.
Yeah.
We have taken them back from those who would mock us and now wear them with pride. But those who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it. Thank you, Santayana. And thus it is helpful to know what these terms originally meant and where they came from. If so, only we know that when someone is called a dorkable, he or she is someone in some sense is calling it. Very nice. Okay. I can't read this word for word. Okay. The term nerd. Let's start there. The word nerd is first used in 1950, Dr. Seuss book, If I Ran the Zoo. I did not know that. In which a nerd is one of the many oddly named creatures in the titular zoo. According to Ben Zimmerman at vocabulary.com, 1951 Newsweek article mentioned it as one of the new terms being used by teenagers. It seems unlikely for teens to have latched onto a single proper noun in a Dr. Seuss book so quickly, but there is no recorded source of the word being used previously.
Hey, he was popular with the teens.
Cool. How about the word geek? Geek is actually an old English word meaning freak, imported via the German word geck, which could also mean fool. Circuses in the 18th century, Austro-Hungary used to advertise their geeks as the weirdest human attractions, and the word was often used to refer specifically to those whose act consisted specifically of biting the heads off live animals.
Hey, I don't know about the live animals, but I think they just described Dragon Con.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, even some animals there. How about dork? Most etymologists think that dork is an alteration of the word dick, perhaps coming out of the Midwest, and thus originally meant penis also. It was certainly used to mean a penis in the 1961 novel Valhalla, although it was spelled D-O-R-Q-U-E.
Hey, wait a minute. I kind of like that spelling there.
Like charcoal briquette.
Yeah.
A 1964 article in American Speech confirmed its phallic meaning and spelled the word as D-O-R-K. It is also used by Charles Schmid, a serial killer known as the Pied Piper of Tucson, who was interviewed in the then obviously extremely prevalent Life magazine, in which he was quoted as saying, "I didn't have any clothes and I had short hair and looked like a dork."
Hey, by the way, I think it was the PvP webcomic.
Yeah.
I think there was a band in the story somewhere named Djork, like D-J-O-R-K. You know, with a J with the two little dots or, you know.
Dork.
Djork.
We also have definitions in the show notes too. You follow the link, you'll find out where the origins of weirdo, dweeb, goof, dickweed, egghead, and Poindexter come from.
The seven words you can't say on podcasting.
I just did. I like some of these comments. Henceforth, I shall only spell the word is D-O-R-Q-U-E.
That's funny.
All right. Secret origins. Yeah. Sometimes they come from long lost places and sometimes they don't. 26 interesting facts about beer. Did you watch this?
Yes, I did.
What did you learn?
Well, most of it I already knew.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah, I heard that. No. I didn't really learn much. I was more like, oh yeah, you kind of moments. You know, there's only really ales and, or did I learn something? Ales and
lagers.
Lagers. Yes. Thank you.
Wow. I listen to more beer casts than you do. And that ain't much.
No.
Craig's been drinking beer and too much beer makes Homer something something.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about it?
I haven't seen the video.
Oh, you didn't watch it?
That's why I was asking you.
Maybe we should just delete this section of the show.
Oh, it went over really well. That's the
part. No, that was pretty cool.
There's always part we leave in just so the listener can fast forward. You missed it.
Yeah. No, there was some cool stuff in here. He talks about the history of beer. The first professional beer brewers were women, he said. Actually, that was a good one.
I didn't know that.
He said that, I forget what country, they said that men were actually forbidden for brewing beer.
What?
I like that. Let's see. Of course. Oh, yeah. You know, beer being fermented and whatnot would last longer than some provisions. So when they went would travel by boat,
yep,
they would carry a lot of beer.
Yep.
To last, you know, longer.
Yep.
You know the four main ingredients of beer, right?
Water, barley, hops, and yeast.
That's correct. And let's see, what else do you say? Oh, a Pilsner is named after the city in the Czech Republic.
But hops came later. They were not one of the original ingredients.
Right. I believe that's correct.
Okay.
An IPA was not invented in India.
No, it was for the trips to India. The hoppier they could make it, the longer it would last.
That's right. Yeah. So, here was an interesting fact I was not aware of, because I usually don't think of calories when I'm drinking beer, you know, or it's like you're counting calories goes out the window when beer comes. But it says that stouts and brown ales are generally lower in calories than regular beer.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought stouts would be higher because they just generally feel thicker, denser, more fuller bodied.
That's exactly what he said, was that, you know, you would think it was the opposite. Yeah. But it's not.
Okay.
Or porter. Which actually, that's what I had tonight. Too? See, I had a chocolate stout.
Okay.
But no, there was some other stuff in there, so I'll let you go read it. Watch
interesting.
It.
Interesting. All right. Also interesting, we have the age-old question, should we just name Uranus already, the planet? That is.
Rename it. Yes.
They renamed it like in 2600 on Futurama. They said, yeah, that joke got a little stale, so they renamed it to Eurectum.
let's rename it to Vagina.
230 years ago. 232 to be precise. A mistake was made. The question is, do we have to keep living with it forever, or is it finally time to rename Uranus? Or Uranus, which is even better.
We should name it Gluteus Maximus.
Even as this is being written, the writer braces himself so that he can be stoic in the face of the inevitable barrage of comments that amount to, I named my anus Flossie. That's the problem. There's no way to write an article without the Uranus subtext. Even when no one mentions it, you know it's there.
Hey, renaming it does nothing. You know why?
Why?
Because we've been calling it this for so long. And in the books, it's like Pluto. Well, it was considered a planet. Now it's not.
But you still call it the same thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
But you change the name, even if you made
lots
it.
Lots of things have been changed names.
Yeah, but people go, the planet formerly known as Uranus.
Well, they don't say the network formerly known as the ARPANET. Right?
We just did earlier. What I'm getting
that
at
is... That was for a state of fact.
Yes, and what I'm getting at is it's always going to be a state of fact that it was called Uranus.
No, I think you would eventually change it and people would forget to mention that. It would just be whatever it is.
There you go. You and your revisionist history.
How many people walk around New York going, oh, this is formerly New Amsterdam? None, right?
But you do know it because of the context.
When William Herschel discovered the planet in 1781, he wanted to name it the Georgian planet after King George, his patron. Unfortunately, the convention for naming planets after Roman gods was, even then, cemented in place. Herschel was shouted down by the astronomical community. What's frustrating now is that the astronomical community, note the name ass in the first part, astronomical community, was international. There had to be a few English speakers who knew the problem, and if even one had the moral courage to stand up and speak out about it, so many things would have been simpler today. But no, they decided on a name that has caused centuries of annoyance and childhood humor, including Technorama. Now, I know that English isn't the only language out there, and that English speakers would be asking other scientists to adjust all their textbooks to suit their own desires. I don't want to be the cultural chauvinist, but Uranus or Uranus just seems too awful to take. I'd like to think that if a planet bore a name that translates in any other language to, say, goat humper or the thing I sneezed out this morning, English speakers would work with them to find a resolution. We struck Pluto from the record books entirely. We are really going to let this travesty blight the lives of future generations. In the interest of fairness, I would also consider renaming the body part. What do you think of Flossie?
Flossie. I don't know, man. I'm telling you. We would be referring to this years and years.
Not if you made it a worse name.
That's true.
People would soon forget about Uranus and go, oh, that other one's better.
Big toe. Boob.
Planet Boob.
Let's go there.
That's the no, you need the binary system to do that.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of renaming it. Craig is not. Let us know, gentle listener, what you think.
Hey, by I think it's what's the point, man? That's what I'm getting at.
Don't forget to put Uranus in the subject. Ha ha ha.
Oh boy. So you went and saw the Desolation of Smog?
The Decimation of Smog, yes.
Yeah.
It's a lot like the other one. There's walking, there's talking, there's fighting. There's walking, they're talking, they're fighting.
Of course.
It's a journey.
It's a long trip. It's a long trip, man.
You know, I'll have to go back to the audiobook because I don't remember the orcs playing such a significant part in the story. I think Peter Jackson just threw that in to make the story better.
Hey, don't ruin it for me now.
You saw the orcs in the last one, right? The dude.
Well, actually, the orcs did have a big part in they did have a big part in the Hobbit.
In the Hobbit? That's why I need to go back and research this. I think there are a few things that were embellished a little more than they should have been.
Bilbo kind of got the ball rolling with them, drawing them out of the cave, and which ended up with the big standoff, with the eagles coming in and saving everybody. But in the book, but trying to remember where else they showed up in.
Okay, I'll go back and re-listen.
Yeah, you do that.
Okay, I do that. Smaug was very good. Benedict Cumberbatch did a good voice for that. A lot of good special effects. A lot of places where you just have to suspend disbelief, like Legolas surfing on an orc down a hillside. It was just a split second, and you're going, okay, that was cute, but oh, really, Peter? You got a great imagination, Mr. Jackson. So, the whole barrel riding scene was fun, and a lot of people were going, oh, ow, ooh, ah, hey.
Yeah, that was a big thing in the book as well.
Oh, yeah.
Barrel thing. Yeah.
Only in the book, they sealed up the barrels.
That's true. That's true.
These were bobbing along with heads sticking out of them and going through the
rapid. Well, what fun is it seeing a sealed barrel going down?
You could get the inside camera version. Dunk, clunk, clunk. Ah.
Yeah.
They did have a nice little crossover between Legolas and Glowin, Gimli's dad.
Right.
Right. They're disarming them, taking all their knives and stuff when the wood elves take them. And he says, who's this ugly person? And he says, that's my wife. He goes, and this one over here, he goes, that's my wee lad, Gimli. and Legolas makes some, comment like, what an ugly cuss or something. It was funny.
However, you will be dealing with him later.
Yeah, a lot of nice tie-ins to both movies. They meet at the end of The Prancing Pony and stuff like that. So it was good. It was visually stunning. But if you're not into that sort of thing, if you didn't like the first one, you're probably not going to like the second one.
Well, I told Harrison about this. I've changed my mind a little bit, not about The Hobbit specifically or Lord of the Rings, but movies. Say if I read the book and I love the book,
yep.
If they take it and make it into a movie or even a radio play or something, I don't necessarily want to see the same thing every time, but I want it to be, I want it to be authentic to the source material, but it doesn't have to be exactly the same.
I often do it in reverse. I like to see the movie so that I can, hear the voices in my head and see the characters as I'm reading it. I think it makes a lot more colorful. Not that I have no imagination, heaven forbid, that's not the case.
Right.
But a lot of times I do it in reverse, and then I can get inside their head and know why they were doing what they're doing, rather than ripping on the movie for not, the movie's never as good because you can't hear what they're thinking and get their backstory as rich. Yeah. I kind of go after the book second sometimes.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care if they're the same. I don't need to watch what I just read. I want to see somebody's interpretation. If it's a little different, that's fine too. But a good example for me, I kind of did what you did, but I read the book, the Lord of the Rings books,
yep,
right before the movie came out. you know, each one. And I was like, actually, I was surprised how well it kind of jived with what I had in my mind. So,
yeah, it was interesting to see that, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Harry Potter was kind of the same way as well, especially mm-hmm. the first book. They just about nailed that one. Wasn't yeah. hard to turn that into a script, or they weren't yeah. very good at turning it into a screenplay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't forget, I mentioned before, this is our last show of the year, and that means we will not be having a Christmas show. That affords you, because I know some of you don't listen to this, the very next day it comes out, or even see it online. But this show comes out on the 18th. That gives us a whole week to let you know, or for you to listen, and go check out norasanta.org. Apparently Craig has also put in an editorial comment that there's an app for that, so that Christmas Eve, you can have fun with the kids watching Santa going all over the world.
Hey, by the way, just to throw this out there, I know we're going a little long, but the Chrome, the Google's got their Santa app where yeah. you can track him as well. And it also has support for the Chromecast, because you could throw it on your TV if you have a Chromecast, which is kind of neat.
Oh, neat. Do you know yeah. anybody who's got one of those yet?
I do.
You do?
Three or four people at work got Chromecast that I know of.
Okay, we'll have to talk about those some other time when we're not already running late.
Yeah, let's do it now.
No. We appreciate you checking out the show and listening. As we said already a few dozen times, don't forget, no show next week. So we will talk to you next year. I got to look at the calendar, but I believe we will be recording that on January 5th for release on the 8th, right? Somewhere in there.
That sounds right. Sure, sounds go right. with that.
So a couple of weeks off for the holidays. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your time. And if you like, do what we said earlier. Call us on the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. We have not heard from some of you in a long time. Just give us a Merry Christmas or a Happy New Year or something.
Please.
Please, please. We're begging for comments now.
Hey, by the way, hopefully we'll have a Secret Santa throw some tip in the tip jar.
Oh, hey. Yeah, New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
Help out an old podcast. Email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. You can send us one of those e-cards. They're funny, too. Find us on Twitter, Facebook. You know, you haven't told a friend about Technorama lately, the Facebook page is a great way to do it. We put stuff in there still. Google+, chuckchat.com. Thanks to Matt Marr for all the content. Everybody who sent us links, the email from Will the Computer Guy. And thank you for listening. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and give me a binary high five.
Ho, ho, ho. 101. There you go. It's all I can muster.